The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Sam, our producer, is back in the booth. He came back with the Friday edition of the Jerusalem Post and the seal, the bulla, right on the front page, above the fold even. Seal of the prophet Isaiah may have been unearthed. And I think as Dr. Mazar brought out, that kind of coverage, well, they didn't even have that for the Hezekiah bulla a couple years ago. So, well, at least not that prominently displayed on the front page. So we were able to get a couple of copies, or at least they were, Sam and Mr. McDonald, since they were down in Israel over the weekend. Some exciting news that came out even as they were busy trying to collect more information for future articles and other projects that hopefully we can get Brad McDonald in here maybe later this week to talk a little bit about some of the things that he's been working on together with Dr. Mazar and a team of research assistants here at Edstone. Speaking of that bulla, by the way, we also let Melanie Phillips know about it, and she had an email exchange with Brent Nachtigall in our Jerusalem bureau there, and she was very excited to learn about the story. She said she was traveling and that she would try to put something up on her blog page as soon as possible, and sure enough, I believe this was today or maybe yesterday, is this the seal of the prophet Isaiah? She talks about some of the things that we bring out in our article and that were in the biblical archaeological or archaeology review. But then this paragraph, and this is on Melanie Phillips' blog page, in the absence of other letters, however, the question is whether the seal belonged to the prophet Isaiah or to a different Isaiah altogether. Fascinating details of the relevant factors for consideration are laid out in this article in The Trumpet, the news magazine of the Philadelphia Church of God, whose Herbert W. Armstrong College in Oklahoma sends volunteers to help with the temple excavations. So a nice plug there for The Trumpet and for the Philadelphia Church of God and for Herbert W. Armstrong College. Of course, Ms. Phillips has spoken at the Armstrong Auditorium. Going back to, when was that? Boy, it was almost a year ago now, I think. Last May, maybe? Last April? In any event, she's someone that we obviously read a lot from, and we're happy to see her cover the Isaiah bulla as well. The traffic, by the way, at the trumpet.com website, I believe Friday was our busiest day of traffic for the year, and that was followed up with Saturday, our second busiest day of traffic for the year. The whole week was really solid because of the revelation on Thursday about the bulla. And so we're finishing the month of February on a really strong note. We had more traffic in January, by the way, than we had in any month on last year's calendar. And it's looking like February, even though it's a shorter month by 3 days, it's looking like February is going to surpass January's numbers. So off to a strong start this year, 2018, for the trumpet.com traffic. And one reason for that, well, besides these exciting world premiere stories and videos that you can read at thetrumpet.com, another reason is because of the accuracy of thetrumpet.com's forecast. Based upon the sure word of God's truth, the sure word of prophecy, as it says in the New Testament. This headline at the Times today about President Xi in China lifts term limits on the presidency. It says Xi Jinping could rule China until his death after the governing Communist Party said it intended to scrap a clause in the Constitution that limits presidents to 2 5-year terms. Now, who was telling you about this just a few months ago? Where all of these additional powers that he was taking to himself, where it was leading. We're already there. It didn't even take a few years into this second term. It's there. This is the Times. It says the amendment is almost certain to be approved by the country's rubber stamp legislature, the National People's Congress, when it convenes in Beijing next week. The change would give President Xi, 64, more power than any Chinese leader since Mao Zedong, who died in 1976. More power than any Chinese leader since Chairman Mao. It says word quickly spread on social media without any overt criticism, in part because restrictions on freedom of speech have been tightened so much that open criticism of the president can be swiftly punished. That's China today. Today, speculation has been growing about the lack of an obvious successor since last October when Mr. Xi was appointed to his second term as the party chief without naming a political heir. He has said that he intends to make China a socialist world power by the middle of the century. China already has the world's second largest economy after the U.S. and has developed extensive trading networks and investments from the developed world and throughout Africa, Central America, and the rest of Asia. Well, as I say, when you go back to, I forget the name of the congressional gathering, where they tweaked this and that and basically gave President Xi more power. We were talking about it. Jeremiah Jacques, the one that does the most of our writing on Asia, and he was talking about it on the Trumpet Hour, had an article posted on it. And I think the article that we posted a few months back, it was in the January issue or the January edition of the Trumpet print edition, where we talked about him becoming the emperor for life. Here's a guy, as Jeremiah brings out in his piece, that he's basically unknown in Chinese politics, just going back 5, 6, 7 years ago. And now he's catapulted up to the level of Chairman Mao. Jeremiah says the fact that Xi's status is now equal to that of the legendary authoritarian Mao has sobering implications. You just look into a little bit of history, and this is a sobering development. It says Xi's first 5-year term confounded those early forecasts. Those that forecasted he was just going to be, carrying on like those previous to him, maintaining the status quo. That's not what happened, we now know. Instead of maintaining the first among equals, this is Jeremiah's article, instead of maintaining the first among equals style of leadership used by his recent predecessors, he adopted a strongman approach. So here's another strongman. The Bible prophesies of all kinds of strongmen to emerge from Asia, from Russia, from Germany. And yet you look at the weakness of our nations today. I'll look at that more closely here in just a second. But here he has adopted this strongman approach. He bypassed state council authorities by forming policymaking party groups, many of which he chairs himself. He took personal control of writing policy on everything from China's economy and international relations to its environmental strategies and internet regulations. He's positioned himself as the unchallenged commander, the commander-in-chief of the People's Liberation Army, Jeremiah says. Here he's accumulated more power than any Chinese leader since Mao. And then Jeremiah talked about that Congress from a few months ago, where Xi unveiled the new lineup in China's top decision-making bodies. Another momentous outcome from the Congress was Xi's break from the convention of naming a successor. Even more astonishing about the 19th Congress was the party's decision to etch Xi Jinping's name and personal ideology into the party constitution. The only other sitting ruler to have his name and ideology written into the constitution was Chairman Mao. So you had Mao thought, now you have Xi thought written right into the constitution. Now listen to this. This is from the Trumpet, okay? This is the conclusion to the article about this Chinese strongman. Fitting perfectly together with the other king in the East, Vladimir Putin. Kings of the East, that's the way your Bible defines it. Or that's the way your Bible describes it. A number of prophecies. I don't have time to get into all of them. We cover it in our booklet, Russia and China in Prophecy. But study into Jeremiah 50 and 51 and Daniel 11 and 12, Revelation 16. Read what Jesus said in Matthew 24. We have the Russia and China in Prophecy booklet. There's also the prophesied Prince of Russia, my father's new booklet from a year or two ago. But listen to the conclusion here. This is from Jeremiah's article just a few months ago. The Chinese elite see that the global order is unraveling. They see American power declining and leadership vacuums opening up. They see that the international stage is primed for conflict, that there's a chance for China to take advantage of the volatility and to emerge as a superpower. He says, finally, there is clear recognition in the highest echelons of Chinese power that in order to attain superpower status, China's 1.4 billion people will need a ruler whose hands are not bound by red tape and who is not limited by checks and balances. They need a strong man at the helm who's free of political encumbrances and capable of streamlined decision-making. They need a new Mao. Yes, that's what China needs. Russia needs its strong man. Soon Germany's going to produce its strong man. And that strong man's going to rally the 10 strong men from Europe, the 10 kings. All over the world, you see these strong men popping up everywhere, except in the nations of Israel. Oh, people will say what they want about Donald Trump and how strong he is, evidently. But really, look at the weakness that our nations are projecting. Look at the weakness, even for those that are sounding the alarm, they think, about the oversteps of President Trump. And then look at the real strong men that, as I say, are popping up everywhere. You contrast what's happening in China or in Russia, or soon to be Europe, with what's going on in the United States. I mentioned last week that article, I forget where it was from. Well, Joel Hilliker had a very similar article at thetrumpet.com. Here again, the Trumpet keeps you right up to date with what you need to know. If you read it regularly, you will be informed. This story about the Russians meddling with the U.S. elections, really meddling in the U.S. wherever they can to cause division or to sow discord. It's like Mr. Hilliker brings out in his piece. The Russians don't care which side wins. I mean, they're not sitting there going, oh, I sure hope the gun control group wins, or the pro-Second Amendment lobby, I hope they win. They're just trying to stir up division and strife, and they're having a lot of success in doing it. Mr. Hilliker writes about that finding from Bob Mueller's investigation. Those 13 Russian nationals that are charged with conspiracy to defraud the United States. I mean, this is not news. We've known this is going on. It's like he said in his piece. I mean, these indictments from a week and a half ago, it just kind of makes everything official. But look at what successes they're having in unraveling the United States. Politically, socially, racially. Joel Hilliker says here, the Russians have a knack for playing on our fears, amplifying our suspicions, and pushing our buttons. They certainly do have a knack for that. He says the Russians don't take sides. They don't care which side is right or wrong, who wins an election, who is president, who's the opposition, as long as America loses. So here, again, look at the contrast. Here you have this strongman positioning himself in Beijing, and the everyday Chinese people are there saying, well, that's what we need. This is the whole global order is unraveling. We need someone strong. We need a strong man. We need to position ourselves to grab power, to become a superpower. And even as you see this happening, look at the United States. Look at the weakness. Look at the UK. Look at Britain. Joel Hilliker says here, studying the Russians' divide and conquer tactics as they are unmasked by the Mueller indictments gives tremendous insight into the way the devil works. He's actively destroying this country. That's speaking of the United States. He's using every trick, tool, and weapon that he can to isolate us, to break us, to shatter us into rivalries. He plays no favorites. He takes every side and no side. Revelation 12:10 calls him the accuser. He accuses, maligns, and scorns people day and night. And everywhere that you look, you see those accusations flying from every direction. I mean, we know the Russians were meddling in the elections. How much are they meddling into the current bitter divide over gun control? Here again, they don't take sides. They don't care which side is right or wrong. They just want to see America lose. Russia's strongman wants to see that. China's strongman wants to see that. Europe wants to see America lose. That's what's prophesied. When we come back, we'll focus more on the United States and all of the division in the country. We'll take you through a few early chapters from the book of Isaiah, something I covered briefly in class this morning, and also look again at this story we touched on last week of the young people in the United States now taking the lead, not just on the gun control debate, but taking the lead, just as Isaiah prophesies. You can read about it in Isaiah 3. We'll look at that, as I say, when we come back. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. America's status as the world's lone superpower is rapidly fading. Other nations and groups of nations are angling to fill the void. Rising in the East is an emerging power block of tremendous potential in manpower, economic heft, and military might. Its growing presence is intensifying global competition for resources and for geopolitical influence. Where will this trend lead? What does this mean for you? Biblical prophecy provides a remarkable, penetrating preview of Asia's future. Request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. This book exposes in startling detail what Russia and China are doing and will do, and how they will affect your life. Also, you'll be sent a free one-year subscription to The Trumpet magazine. The Trumpet looks at today's headlines through the clear light of Bible prophecy. The Trumpet will keep you up to date on the continuing rise of the powers in the East by taking a hard look at today's news and comparing it to the prophecies of the Bible. The Trumpet magazine is this world's most informed news magazine. To learn more, request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy.
Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
Act today and request Russia and China in Prophecy. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
I'll get back into a few newsy things here in just a second, but let me just start with this study through some of the highlights from the first few chapters of the book of Isaiah. Isaiah 1, of course, speaks of the sickness that you see in our nations today. Isaiah 1 and verse 2, about God saying, look, I've nourished and brought up children, but they've rebelled against me. Isaiah goes on to say, the ox knows his owner and the ass his master's crib, but Israel does not know. My people does not consider. We don't know God. We've forgotten our maker. We haven't given God thanks and praise. As it says over in Romans 1, we've forgotten God. We're certainly not honoring him. And God says in verse 4, ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. They have forsaken the eternal. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward. The children in this case refers to the people of Israel as a whole. And by that, I don't mean just the little nation of Judah or the little Israeli state in the Middle East, but primarily the United States and Britain. They're the ones that took on the name Israel. The lost 10 tribes, Joseph among them, Ephraim and Manasseh in particular, God's chosen people anciently. But look at all of the corruption and the decay and the ruin. Verse 5, it says, why should you be stricken anymore? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick, and the whole heart is faint. From the sole of the foot, even to the head, there's no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. And so God compares our entire society to sickness from head to toe, disease, and it's leading to verse 7, desolation, burned out cities, strangers devouring our nations. Verse 9, this is Isaiah 1, it says, except the Eternal of Hosts has left unto us a very small remnant, we should have been as Sodom, and we should have been like unto Gomorrah. It's just a very small remnant carrying on with God's work in a society that's very much like Sodom and Gomorrah of old. That's where we're heading. And of course, we think it's progress. We think all of this is development and advancement. But God sees it as a lot of filth. Verse 16, wash you, make you clean, put away evil. Put away the evil of your doings from before your eyes. Cease to do evil, God says, and learn to do well. Seek judgment. Serve God. And then verse 18, a memory verse for many of our students, it says, come now and let us reason together, says the Eternal. Though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. Though they be red like crimson, they shall be as wool. That's what happens when we clean up our lives. God will purge out those scarlet-colored stains and purify us. Well, chapter 2, you read about a lot of idolatry in the land and how that God really has to shake our nations in order to humble us, to get us to the point where we'll humbly go before God. Verses 18 through 20 speak of the idolatry. And then verse 22, it says, "Cease you from man, whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of?" Cease from man. Don't look to man. That's how chapter 2 ends. And, of course, that leads you right into chapter 3, the crisis that we see in leadership today. In Israel, there's a leadership crisis in our nations. Not in China or Russia, but there sure is in the United States. Look at the breakdown of leadership at every level with that mass shooting tragedy in Florida. I mean, I know the gun control advocates and their friends in the media, they've done their very best to make this a story about the weapon, you know, the rifle. But the big lesson from this tragedy is that if you don't have leadership, righteous leadership that confronts evil, I mean, that evil is going to spread. And that evil will eventually destroy you. The FBI missed all kinds of red flags, particularly the tip on January 5th. It was laid all out there for the federal agents at the school. I mean, even though this killer had been in all kinds of trouble in recent years, there have been reports describing that school district as going soft on crime to satisfy the advocates saying that, well, you've got to be fair. You've got to be fair in all of these penalties. And how come blacks and Latinos keep being the ones that you're going after? And so what did the school do? The school stopped penalizing any of them, whatever their race. Didn't want to offend people. And so here's this crazed lunatic causing all kinds of trouble, making threats, bringing knives and bullets to school, promising bloodshed. And then, of course, you know probably about the sheriff and his organization. This Sheriff Israel, by the way, he was one that I think following the Vegas shooting from October, he basically said on a local interview, if you have a killer who has the weapons to kill and he's determined to carry out a mass shooting, there's really nothing you can do. And of course, now we find out that there were deputies there, but they didn't do anything. It's just astounding, the level of incompetence at the very top levels of government and law enforcement. Sheriff Scott, by the way, he was at that town hall meeting last Wednesday. I talked about this the next day, but he was there, certainly right in alignment with all the kids, calling for more gun control, calling for lawmakers to give the police more power. That's what he was saying last Wednesday, and of course, since that town hall meeting, which really was a gun control advocacy put on display by CNN. After that, we learned even more about this total breakdown in the local law enforcement agency. Jake Tapper, by the way, he was the one that was sort of the moderator of that so-called town hall meeting from last week, and he pressed Sheriff Scott Israel yesterday with a line of questioning that he should have asked last Wednesday. Where were these questions when everyone that was given a voice last Wednesday came from the gun control crowd. What about the breakdown in leadership? Well, at least you have to give Mr. Tapper some credit for asking a few days later. This was an exchange from his program yesterday morning with Sheriff Israel. Clip one.
Are you really not taking any responsibility for the multiple red flags that were brought to the attention of the Broward Sheriff's Office about this shooter before the incident, whether it was people near him, close to him, calling the police on him?
Jake, I could only take responsibility for what I knew about. I exercised my due diligence. I've given amazing leadership to this agency.
Amazing leadership?
I've worked... Yes, Jake. There's a lot of things we've done throughout this. You don't measure a person's leadership by a deputy not going into a. These deputies received the training they needed.
Maybe you measure somebody's leadership by whether or not they protect the community. In this case, you've listed 23 incidents before the shooting involving the shooter, and still, nothing was done to keep guns out of his hands, to make sure that the school was protected, to make sure you were keeping an eye on him. Your deputy at the school failed. I don't understand how you can sit there and claim amazing leadership.
Even Jake Tapper is taken aback at this sheriff that's claiming that he's given amazing leadership when you have all of these incidents, like was brought out, and nothing done. Nothing done, as I said all last week. You have plenty of laws on the books that could have prevented this. If you had leaders in place who are actually prepared to take action. And then, as I say, following that town hall from last Wednesday, we learned on Thursday and Friday that there were deputies. There were deputies there, one in particular who was armed and wearing a bulletproof vest, who would not go into that freshman building, even as he heard shots ringing out. He stayed on the outside, hunkered down, behind a barrier. This was the one thing that deputy was trained for, but he didn't confront the shooter. He chose to hide rather than to fight. Now, again, when you talk about acting courageously, none of us, I suppose, fully know what sort of action we'd take if called upon to make that kind of a move, or to make that kind of a sacrifice, or to potentially put your own life in harm's way, and really to focus only on the deputy would be unfair as well, because, as I say, you go from top to bottom. Whether it's the FBI, the sheriff's department, the deputies on hand, armed, there at the school when it was happening. No one followed through and confronted. 23 incidents. Others have reported 39 incidents. 23, even if it's 23 over the course of 7 years. And then these deputies that were on hand, some reports saying the one who's since resigned and accepted his retirement package, and then three others that were there taking a position outside as the shooter was just left to finish his rampage. There certainly, I don't think you could characterize all of these breakdowns a number of ways, but amazing leadership is not one of them. One other exchange here. This was toward the end of the nearly 30-minute interview between Jake Tapper and the sheriff of Broward County. Here's clip two.
The last question, sir. Do you think that if the Broward Sheriff's Office had done things differently, this shooting might not have happened?
Listen, if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, O.J. Simpson would still be in the record books.
I don't know what that means. There's 17 dead people, and there's a whole long list of things your department could have done differently.
That's Jake Tapper interviewing Sheriff Scott Israel yesterday. about what could have been done differently. And I assume that's a leader saying nothing. We did everything right. Or if there are mistakes that were made, it was this one deputy that should have acted. That's about it. Not a lot of contrition, as I said last week. And the prophet Isaiah here, chapter 3 now, remember, it ends chapter 2 saying, cease you from man. I mean, don't look to men. Human nature is the source of the problem. But then what does God prophesy? Verse 1 of the next chapter, it says, for behold, the Lord of hosts, does take away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stay and the staff and the whole stay of bread and the whole stay of water. The mighty man, he's taken this away from Jerusalem or Israel and Judah. The United States, Britain, and Judah, primarily. The mighty man, the man of war, the judge, the prophet, the prudent, the ancient, the captain of 50, the honorable man, and the counselor, and the cunning artificer, and the eloquent orator. God's taken it all away. Strong leadership. And so many of our leaders have degenerated to a child's level in judgment and decision. And then adding to that, I mean, and that's part of this picture as well. You have those adults that are in the room stepping aside and pushing the teenagers to the microphones, looking to the teens, looking to the young people for leadership. And that too, it comes right out of Isaiah 3. When we come back, I'll finish through that study of the third chapter, and also play for you a montage that comes from CNN. And this goes back to the early days following that tragedy, which was a couple of weeks ago now. But in just looking at the major media and how they were so eager to push the teens to the front of the microphone so much and so often, that many of those teens are now household names. Those are the ones, we're told, who are going to fix the problems of the United States. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Do you have a message for the lawmakers? Do you have a message for Congress, for the president?
Yeah. David, we wanted to have you back because your interview yesterday got a lot of attention with us because you made this personal appeal. I mean, you just looked at the camera and you said to everybody listening, we're children, you're adults, figure this out, children are dying. Did you hear from any leaders? Did you hear from anybody in power after that yesterday?
Some people who say there's nothing you can do to stop somebody if they want to kill, they're going to find a gun no matter the law. As a 16-year-old student who just went through this in your community with your friends, what would you say to the adults?
I want to read one of the president's tweets from over the weekend. He wrote, I'm wondering what you think of this tweet and others from the president this week.
Look, and we have examples of other countries that have done more and have passed national gun control laws. And guess what? Gun violence went down.
Shocking.
Do you think that you and your friends are going to finally do what it takes to make a difference on this issue?
Your fellow students have spoken out so powerfully. One of the biggest challenges is going to be keeping up this momentum, keeping up these voices. How do you and your friends, your classmates, plan to do that, to keep the momentum, to keep at it, to not...
President Trump has been known to watch cable news on occasion. If he were watching right now, what would you want to say to him?
But what are you going to say when these lawmakers say, you know, guns aren't the problem? People are. What do you say to that?
I know that you were saying that thoughts and prayers only go so far. I mean, they're cold comfort at some point after this. And what do you want President Trump to know? You're saying, you know, President Trump made some statements about this yesterday. He spoke about it, but he didn't mention guns.
I think it's ironic because...
The pain you're feeling now, her funeral was held today. What are you trying to do in Tallahassee to honor her memory?
Thank you, all of you, for your bravery and your just amazing ability to have presence of mind and to be able to speak truth to power in a way that a lot of grown-ups can't do.
There are some on the right. They're attacking students personally. They're saying that you're tools of the anti-gun lobby. How do you respond to that kind of poisonous environment?
So, I mean, how do you expect politicians who need money to keep running for office to say no to the NRA?
Because we keep telling them that if they accept this blood money, they are against the children. They are against the people who are dying. And that there's no other way to put it at this point. You're either funding the killers or you are standing with the children.
If you can't get elected without taking money from child murderers, why are you running?
You know, for a lot of people, even those who are grieving with these kids in this community, when they hear, oh, well, you know, the NRA is a terrorist organization, you know what? They're going to hear that differently.
That was one kid.
There are a lot of people who don't believe that.
That was one upset teenager who was speaking there. And that's relevant
as well.
And
I think they're allowed to use those kinds of extreme...
It's not a question of whether we're allowed. Everybody's allowed to do whatever they want.
I mean, I think it actually might be effective.
Yeah, that's CNN talking about how, hey, if they're kids, they can say whatever. They're kids. We can't criticize them. They can call the NRA child murderers. They can say that Marco Rubio is funded by killers. And that's fine. In fact, we'll put them up as teenage props to carry out our agenda. It's all gun control. It's all the weapon. There's no education. There's no appreciation of history. There's no explanation of why the founding fathers even drew it up as number two. There's just the agenda. And so here are the adults, quite happy to step aside and to let the teenagers take the lead. Is that a good decision? And here again is nothing against young people. You look at God's work, and I've said it before, how instrumental our youths are in supporting the work. But if young people aren't given proper direction, if the adults aren't leading the young people, you are headed for disaster. That is exactly what Isaiah 3 is about. God says, I'm taking away all the leaders, and what will I give you? Children. Children will be your princes. Babes will rule over you. God's not saying this as if it's a good thing. This is a curse. This is a curse. What a crisis we're seeing in leadership. In leadership. Michelle Malkin had a piece last week. At least there's one out there. There should have been 500 articles with a title like this. Do not let the children lead. Good for her. Don't let the children lead. She's asking, where are the grown-ups in this time of crisis? Well, too many of them are calling for the teens to lead. There's distinguished professors calling for the voter age to be lowered to 16. Barack Obama tweeting out last week, young people have helped lead all of our great movements. How inspiring to see it again in so many smart, fearless students standing up for their right to be safe. marching and organizing to remake the world as it should be. We've been waiting for you, he said. And we've got your backs. We've been waiting for you young people to take the lead. His wife, Michelle Obama, she tweeted out, I'm in total awe of the extraordinary students in Florida, all the gun control zealots. I'm in total awe of the extraordinary students in Florida. Like every movement for progress in our history, gun reform will take unyielding courage and endurance. I believe in you. We're proud of you. And we're behind you every step of the way. Lead from behind. Do we really want our children to take the lead, as Michelle Malkin asked? Well, they're taking it. It says, because these children are apparently doing a better job at broadcasting his own ineffectual political views, Douglas asserts, she's paraphrasing, I think, a tweet from a law professor, saying that, well, now the NRA's finally found its match in the teenagers. Oh, I can't wait to see this play out, this law professor says. The teens, they're going after the NRA. It's the 17-year-old leading all of the boycotts. If you do business with the NRA, if you give discounts because of the NRA or to the NRA, then we're going to boycott you. And so have you seen it all through the weekend? All these major companies that are now backing out of their arrangements with the NRA? Because, well, the teenagers are telling us the NRA are, they're child murderers. They're funding killers. It says, Harvard law professor Lawrence Tribe tweeted, wouldn't it be great if the voting age were lowered to 16? It's just a pipe dream, I know, but hashtag children's crusade. It's a crusade they're on. There's a big rally scheduled for several big cities in the U.S., I think later in March. And all the funding coming in from the Hollywood types, the Hollywood elites, hundreds of thousands of dollars. We've got to get behind the children's crusade. Michelle Malkin says, this is unadulterated silliness. This is not compassion. This is abdication. This is surrender. America is not a juvenileocracy. It's a constitutional republic. There's a reason we don't elect high school sophomores and juniors to public office or allow them to cast ballots. There are many, many reasons, actually. She says pubescents are fueled by hormones and dopamine and pizza and Sonic shakes. They're fickle and fragile and fierce and forgetful. They hate you, they love you. They need you, they ignore you. They know everything, they know nothing, all in a span of 10 seconds. If you're lucky, they've only Googled, should I eat Tide Pods? Or what happens if I snort ramen powder? And not actually attempted the latest social media stunt challenges. These are just the latest challenges on social media. She says many may be exceptionally smart, passionate, and articulate beyond their years, but they do not possess any semblance of wisdom because they have not lived those years. Their knowledge of history, law, and public policy is severely limited, and their moral agency and cognitive abilities are far from fully developed. I mean, that's just the truth. That's why they need parents and educators to teach them, to give them direction. But look at the parents and the educators. They're cheering them on. President Obama employed this very same kitty human shield strategy to ram his federal health care takeover through Capitol Hill and down our throats. Immigration and education lobbyists use it too. Their cynicism is unbounded. Human propapalooza infantilizes public discourse and renders measured, mature dissent impossible. Those who question the logic, efficacy, and wisdom of the latest left-wing children's crusade face accusations of hating the children, refusing to acquiesce to their tears and protests is tantamount to letting them die. If you even criticize, then you must be a child murderer. You must be sympathizing with the killers. Well, here again, Isaiah 3, and I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, said years ago that the future welfare and even the existence of civilization is dependent on the educational system. I mean, that's how important it is that we bring them up in the way that they ought to go. Like the proverb says, my father gave a program. Where was this from? This is from last year, just a year ago, the Matthew 24 prophecy. And he's commenting here in this clip on what it says here in Isaiah 3. Notice, clip 3.
Notice what one of our founders, John Adams, said. Quote, children learn the meaning of morality, religion, and respect for law from the habitual fidelity of their parents to one another. And of course, he was talking about marriage. And we see so much scorn and hatred for our founding fathers, and yet, listen to that. Let me tell you, that is a biblical statement to the core. And we should understand that. And if you don't have that family relationship, then Isaiah 3 and verse 12 says it's upside down and all kinds of problems develop and the children actually rule over the whole family. Well, that's what you see in much of our young people today. Isn't that true? If we look at the colleges, and they will hardly even allow anybody to speak there if they don't agree with them. And that's a very serious problem in a democratic society. It literally will tear it apart in time, and that won't take a lot of time.
That's quite a statement from last year, talking about the children ruling over the family, taking over college campuses, and saying how serious it is in a democratic society. It literally will tear it apart in time. And he said, it won't take a lot of time. It certainly is not taking much time. They're up now on the national stage. They're the ones that the politicians are sitting down in front of. They're the ones that the adults are receiving counsel from now. It's upside down, just as Isaiah said. Isaiah 3, verses 4 and 5, right here in the third chapter. And then my father mentioned verse 12. Let me read verse 5. And the people shall be oppressed, every one by another, and every one by his neighbor. And the child shall behave himself proudly against the ancient, and the base against the honorable. Proud. Proud children, arrogant children, angry and bitter children. That's what the Bible prophesies. We have nothing against children. We love children. We want our young couples to produce as many as they can, as many as they can afford. Because when they are brought up in the way that they should go, there is no greater blessing in a family. There's no greater blessing for God's church than strong, stable families with well-mannered, respectful, honest children. But when the family breaks down, when the family government is upside down, those same children will oppress the family, the community, the entire nation. The people shall be oppressed. Isaiah says, verse 12, as for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead you, cause you to err, and destroy the way of your paths. Who's leading? And they cause you to err. Well, the men, the strong men, are to blame as well, because they've gone AWOL. They're absent. They're not acting in strength. They're not confronting evil. They're not protecting schools and families. And of course, it starts at the family level. Starts with fathers. Some sobering prophecies, these are, certainly. But again, if you look at the contrast, look at what's happening in Israel, look at what's happening in the United States, and then consider these strong men that keep popping up all over the world. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.